Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back to the Dr. Supercoach podcast, powered once again by our partners at Code Sports. You can head over to Code Sports and read our latest article. We've got a few new trade ideas coming into the next round. With me tonight to talk all things Supercoach, it is Pistol, my man. I'm chasing you down. It is official. The Chiso chase down has begun. I've gone a 22.88 this week, and I've got you quaking in your boots.
I did see you jump from, like, what, 30K to 10K in 1 week. Which is
exciting. Yeah, 19,300 ranks in 1 week.
That's exciting. Good job by you. I mean, this season has been a little bit of, I keep saying a disaster. My rank's been decent, but I said on the last podcast, I have to nail all my trade-ins for the rest of the year or I'm going to be in big trouble because I keep trading in players who get injured. And obviously I trade in Tuk Miller and he got injured.
Oh.
And now I have to trade him out. So I had to boost to get him in, and now I have to boost to get him out. So I'm also going to be down two boosts. It's just a disaster. I haven't caught a break this whole season. But look, my team is really good, and I've said that since week one, even though I'm copying it. 2-2-1-6. I moved up to 1,600th overall. So I've been making massive headway despite trading in injured players for – what is it, four times now this season? It's just ridiculous.
Yep. It's probably more, honestly.
It's look, my trade situation's not good, and it's going to continually be poor.
What? Because I can't. A pistol trade situation? You run. This is unheard of. You're really conservative with your trades.
I would have had such a good season. I know everyone's probably saying that, but like, I'm already doing decently with all these injuries. I mean, what could have been? It's just kind of, it's frustrating. But you know what, Chiso, I'm getting off that mindset. And I'm switching off that mindset now. Moving forward, I'm going to have a bit of fun with it. There's almost no chance I'm going to be able to finish the team how I want to, given the lack of trades I have. And going a bit YOLO with my trades this week. And I'm just going to bring in the players that I really want to have. It's kind of like you and your boy Darcy Parrish last week and it turning out for you. I think if I have a bit of fun with it, don't overthink it as much. At least I'll get some enjoyment out of the rest of the year. And hopefully that holds me in good stead. So, hoping to bring in Sam Walsh this week.
Nice. I like that. And you did mention that I obviously brought in my boy Darcy Parrish for the first time in history since he's been a premium. And at halftime, sitting in the mid-20s, I thought I was in big trouble. Luckily, I had to catch a plane, so I couldn't actually watch the score from that point on, which was probably good as an Essendon supporter. But got off the plane and saw him in the three figures, so I was super happy with that. Got the win over you as well, which is most important.
You mean Essendon the win over Collingwood? That's when you left. That's when you got on the plane and you still haven't checked the scores.
That's right. I guess the biggest positive after all that this week, it's not my rank, it's not Parrish being half decent, all that kind of thing. It's that I actually managed to attend a wedding without trading in Josh Kelly. And I figured out the secret, Pistol, and that's already having him in my team.
Yeah, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice. That's a problem when you've done that two times. But yeah, third time's the charm, already having Josh Kelly. Great job by you.
And I can't believe it took three times for me to figure that out, mate.
And a big score this week, right, from him.
Yeah.
So, worked out.
Yeah. He's been decent. 111 as a mid. Like, I'm not quite as high as probably what I thought he was going to go, but the fact that all the other the midfielders are scoring, I suppose their scores are upticking a little bit at the moment. getting him in the 500s versus someone starting Laird for basically the same amount of points as, or at least the same average as, is a win. We've got some housekeeping to go through, Pistol, before we get into the Supercoach. We've got a couple sign-ups over on Patreon. We've got Daniel Parsons, McJobes, and Toby. Thank you so much for joining up over onto Patreon. And, Pistol, we do have a whole bunch of sign-ups here. I'm going to start with JK. Thanks for the donation, JK. Donating for Laird and Sloan, the Berry substitute, while he's out, and a dumb thing by not putting the E on Marshall in round five. Thank you, JK.
Is that English?
D. Marshall.
There was so much going on there. Marshall,
yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah, and there was no commas, no nothing like that. No, there was no full
stop.
That
was one sentence.
One big sentence.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
there was a lot of words in that one.
Yeah. I can't read at the best of time. Dennis D, Lobster 1, Flag Mantle 0. Thanks, Dennis. We got Wazza donating for losing to Azza in Rivalry League. There's a very, very good meme. Where as is, I am the Wazza now, so that was very funny. Go Crom has donated for dumb things. Where to begin? He had English VC,
good.
Traded in Took Miller via Tom Green, and then slapped the C on him.
No.
Had Fergie Green on the bench as well, and had him to loop via Davey, and that plan didn't go well either. All made worse because I made sure my mates took English's VC score while I didn't myself.
He didn't take the 131.
Yeah, Cardinals.
That's
in.
Crazy
Cardinals
to me.
In. I can't tell you how many times
thanks
I've had
for
a
your
120
donation.
Plus, not taken it, and ended up with a double figure captaincy. Benny made a boo boo, an ode to being a dumbass by Benny in Rivalry League. For the big wins, you risk it. Do late trades in the chase for the biscuit. Thought there was time based on KO, then reared the delay-o. Cogs locked on the bench without the emergency. What a half win. Yeah, that's disappointing.
That's
imagine
bad.
Having 130 locked on your bench. Then we got Benjamin Buzzington. Penance for a spoon. By Benny, there's a keeper league with violent banters. We are foul-mouthed and gibberish ranters. From the quest for the ring is a real cutthroat thing, and game week comes dribbling with slanders.
Dripping. Dribbling.
Dribbling with slanders.
There's another donation by Benny. Thank you very much for your generosity.
He's gone with his
three different names.
He's gone with, yeah, his three aliases. Oh, maybe we can track his three different Slack accounts now. okay, so he's got Better Late Than Missing Tax Season by Benny. The wager was Eagles higher than Swans with TP, and then Maz came. Oh my God. Is this supposed to be a limerick this time?
I don't think this one is a limerick. I think you've
okay,
just had
better late
two
than
limericks
missing tax season.
This one's not.
Thanks, Benny. Okay, bye, Benny. The wager was Eagles higher than Swans with TP, and then Maz came a clambering on, and so finally...
yeah, it's definitely a limerick.
Oh, my God. Thank you, Benny. You've done... I really appreciate it, mate. Moving on. Now, Meso's made a bet... with JB last week that he'd make a donation if he lost a single game in Rivalry League at all this season because he was having such a good run. And he's literally lost the week that he made the bet. So he's made a donation. So I appreciate you for that, Meso. Two to go. Whitey says, for forgetting to take Ralston off the field and not getting Fergus Green's score. Also to pay JB for the hug he gave me on Slack when I badly needed it when Took went down. Cheers, legend. Thanks, Whitey, and thanks, JB.
Whitey and I have... We started with the same team. It was the only person I'm aware of. We had the exact same starting team. And then we both did the exact same trade from Witts to Darcy Cameron. And both got that. And now we've both, and I didn't speak to him this week, but clearly we've both brought in Took Miller as well. So we're coughing it, Whitey and I. So thanks for the donation, but that's rough.
Yeah. Our last donation is Luke Kenyon. What's the Cancer Council donation link? I brought Davey on field hoping to loop with Chandler's 85 and would have won all of my leagues and got over 2,200, but had to deal with a 44 on field when I thought he wasn't playing. Yeah, that stinks.
I just want to say, firstly, thank you to everyone that's donated, but Luke specifically, when you've started this with saying, what's the Cancer Council donation link, did you just copy and paste your Slack message into this message and forget to remove that line? Because that is
I think he has.
That is hilarious. I feel like it's like a, you know, it's like a dumb thing within a dumb thing within a dumb thing within a dumb thing type thing going on. Dumbception.
Yep.
But thank you for the donation. And we had Benny's went through like a donation inception sort of thing. There's just, it's a lot today. But thank you very much for an incredibly generous week by the community. Huge. Really, one of the biggest weeks we've had in a long time.
Yeah, it usually means something's going wrong when that happens to the Cancer Council, but turning into a positive. Before we get into some Supercoach pistol, I do just want to say to everyone that's had a bad week, and you know, we've talked about this before, those that brought in Tuke this week, you got to remember that good choices can have bad outcomes. And I would hope to think if presented with the same situation again, like in the future, you would still be backing yourself in and you would still be making that trade. You can't predict injuries on, particularly on players that have basically no injury history that we really know about. And so, you know, good decisions can have bad outcomes and bad decisions can have good outcomes. So it's important to remember how and why you made the decision and not base it on what the outcome was. That's called outcome bias. And it can really lead you down a garden path into thinking that you've done better or worse just based on the outcome and not the actual choices. So Pistol, in your position, I would like to think that given the same scenario, you'd be making a similar set of... You'd probably bring in Tuke again.
Yeah, I would. And I'd bring in Roberts again as well, who got injured.
Yep.
So yep. I can't... I'm not really too upset about specifically Roberts because nearly everyone brought him in because it was kind of the like obvious thing to do. I can't... You just... Everyone's kind of going to cop that one. I think the Tuke one hurts a bit more just purely because of an ownership type thing. And I use my boost... And on a POD to get injured and then have to, you know, boost back out. So, and then I'm thinking with Clary's price dropping fast cheese as well, I'm probably going to use another boost the next week. And I've ended up just, you know, I used one boost to boost Tuke in, one boost to boost Tuke out. I did the hokey pokey and now, you know, got Clary's boost, Clary boost next week too. So it's just all my boosts are going.
And then you've run out.
And then I've run out. Oh, you finished it off. Thank you.
Yeah. So I thought that was important to say off the top. So now let's get into the real meat and veggies of the podcast. I think we're going to start off with the rookies. That seems to be a common theme here, mate. We've got a couple guys that are sort of topping out, and I think the important thing to remember, these aren't family members. There's no emotion when you cut these guys. If you've got a rookie that is reaching that break-even point and there's not a whole lot of money left to be made, I'm talking about the likes of Cowan, I'm talking about Wilmot, these guys, I think it should be a no-brainer for us that they should be on the chopping block to begin with. Pistol, do you have any other names off the top of your head that you think should be in the unemotional bin them basket?
Like the Philippou types? Yep. I think you can start being savage with him. And I mean, probably not this week. There's a couple that are, you know, next week culls, but we can start looking at some of those higher price players as well as we try and get some of the kings of
Supercoach. I've got a list here.
Yep.
And you tell me if you disagree with them. I'd be happy to cut any of Cowan, McKenna, Wilmot, Davey, Jinby if you haven't already, McKenzie if you haven't already, Philippou, Will Phillips, and Eminem, Michael Aney.
Yeah. All of those I would be willing to cut. Even, to be fair, even somebody like, I mean, I prefer not to cut Ashcroft, but you probably could if you wanted to. I guess. I mean, it really depends on who you're getting in, but I stick with those other guys first on the list. And same with Stocker. Yeah, I'd rather hold Stocker another week. Like, technically, you can probably cut them, but I'd rather get decent scores on field if I can.
Is there any particular order that you would do? Like you would like to get the pricier guys, say like the McKenna out ahead of the cheaper guys because you can do more with that cash, or would you try and find the two cheaper ones there and see what you can do with it? Like for example, instead of chasing someone like Oliver. Who's coming down a little bit in price, you could easily like upgrade to like maybe a Will Day or a Jack Zeeble if you don't have them by using some of the cheaper guys.
Mm-hmm. I think
you don't have a preference or
I think there's every world that somebody like Cowan gets dropped this week, so you don't even have to worry about them losing money. And then Phillips as well potentially could be dropped. He was tactically subbed out, and then I think Hugh Greenwood went on with a, you know, 30-touch, 10-tackle game in the VFL anyway. So he's probably you'd think could be well on his way back into the side. So in my mind, if those guys are dropped, there's no desperate trade for them because they're not going to lose money. I try and pick off players that I think might drop in money. I mean, Connor McKenna's got a break even of 62. Although against Fremantle at playing at home, I feel like that's a pretty decent matchup. He probably, if he does drop, it's only going to be very minor, but I'd be probably looking at someone like him and Wilmot as like my first two because the slight concerns that they might lose money over somebody who's dropped. I know it sounds weird keeping people who aren't playing, but I've got in the back of my mind, Chizu, that there's some good rookies that we'll talk about soon that are coming through next week, and you know we can trade the non-playing guys out next week over the guys that are, you know, prioritize the guys that might lose money first.
Yeah, yeah. I think playing the break even game is the smartest thing to do. Let me counter with something in saying that. Say McKenna, he does have a break even that's closer. He's also the guy that's probably going to, you know, the Cowan, Davies, these kind of guys. He's the one that's probably a chance of popping out a bit of a spike score if he's going to have a decent game.
Yeah.
Whereas like the Wilmots game that he played absolutely out of his skin. He got 69 or something like that.
Yeah.
So I guess the way that I try to do it is like I'm looking at going like a Wilmot and Cowan out because that I can literally do two trades and get a Will Day this week by doing that. And if I was going to do a third, then I'd do something like McKenna. But it just goes. It's really based on in that system, like scenario what you can actually do with the cash.
Yeah,
I think as well.
What about trading? I know some people might be holding Chesser, they might be holding Constable, and now they've brought in Roberts, who's injured.
Yeah.
Do you think
another dead?
Yeah. Do you think that it's worth correcting one of those guys now, or is now not the time?
I don't think it is. I think we're right in the middle of upgrade season.
Yeah.
I think we touched on it last week where we really hammered home everyone needs to focus on their upgrade cadence. As long as you're not at risk of copping donuts this week, and the DPP with Roberts and Constable really helps in that fashion, I think I would still be focusing on that upgrade cadence before I would be doing a Chesser, a Roberts, a Constable sideways to someone. At this point in time, it's just, it's not that it's a wasted trade. It's just more of a trade that hasn't benefited you in the moment.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of looking at it. I mean, look, as long as you don't have like, I don't know, 5+ dead players on your bench, so you literally are running out of cash. All these players that you're trading out now, right? Like, let's say I'm trading out McKenna and I'm bringing in Seamus Mitchell from Hawthorn, right? Like, Mitchell might be primed to trade out in 5 weeks or so. So you get another guy that that you can cull in 5 weeks' time, and you create that cycle, and you only needed that one spot on your field. Like, you didn't need your entire bench. You only need, realistically, at this stage of the season, I mean, obviously the more the merrier with cash gen, but you can get away without having an entirely playing bench as long as you have, what, like 4, maybe 5 bench guys that are making money. You can get away with it just by cycling through those guys. And then I personally feel like the best time to do those sideways trades is, one, if there's, you know, a particularly special rookie that looks like they're going to play every game for the rest of the season, or just they look amazing, and then you're like, okay, this is worth doing the sideways trade because they just look phenomenal and I wouldn't otherwise be able to get them. Or right before a buy in which you're going to cop a donut, you're like, okay, if I have to burn a trade now, at least I'm going to burn the trade for this rookie and get, you know, 60 points out of it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I can solve two birds with one stone kind of scenario, like as close to the buy as possible, because then the rookies might play through the buys, which is really important. So any player we bring in this week might not make it to the buys. It's just a fact.
Yeah, yeah. Might not even make it to next week.
As we see.
The way they're playing. Yeah. While we're talking about some of these rookies, I do want to just touch on Sheasel. He obviously copped attention. Isn't it weird that we're in a year that Sheasel gets tagged before Nick Daicos?
Yeah. Isn't that funny?
Explain that one to me. Explain that to me.
I can't. It's, you're right. He copped a tag by Holman. He was coming in with like a corky and a sore thumb, so he was probably a bit underdone. Didn't train much during the week, then cops the tag, like the worst of both worlds there. I am in the strong camp of let's see how he looks next week. I mean, at the end of the day, he had 5 tons in a row. So if that was just an off game and he goes back to tonning up every week, then happy days. Otherwise, we just, you know, we'll have to deal with it depending on what his score is and what his role is. Because at the end of the day, I know Hall came in and Sheasel kind of got thrown about, but there was the tag and everything. If Sheasel's not tagged and is starting forward, then, you know, it's dire situations next week. But
yeah,
not
I guess this is where I'm going with this. Like he obviously copped attention. He's now got a 53 in his rolling average. It makes his break even 99, which, you know, he's had 5 games where that hasn't been a problem. But now he's got Melbourne, St Kilda, Port Adelaide, Sydney, Collingwood, Essendon in his next 6 weeks.
That's pretty hard.
that is a really, really rough 6 weeks for North. And we are going to be faced very, very quickly with a really tough decision about whether he's going to be a hold until the buys, because if he starts, if this is him copping attention and a few knocks and maybe he needs a rest and he doesn't have that reliability that we thought we did. Like this might be jumping at Shadows a bit, Pistol. You stop me if you think that's the case. But I just feel like with that 6 game running up, there's every chance that he might be given a cruisier role, or maybe he gets subbed 1 week and he gets managed a little bit and suddenly he starts dropping in cash. And any rookie that's made it to 440K can drop down very, very precipitously if we don't keep an eye on it.
I agree with you. I'm so committed to thinking he's not going to make it to the buy that I'm bringing in a round 15 buy player, which I wasn't considering last week because I thought, hey, Sheasel might be a keeper. And now I'm like, you know what? He might not be a keeper. So we'll wait and see. But I'm somewhat committing to getting rid of him, even if it's at his buy, because I'm just bringing in another around 15 buy player in Walsh this week. So, yeah, that's basically where I sit. And I do agree with you. Thanks for pointing out that run. I hadn't noticed. And it is very scary.
Yeah, I guess the thing for me is even if he goes 50 or 60, what's he drop, like maybe 20K or something like that? But then if you don't trade him, you are literally committed to holding him for like at least to the buys, if not like planning on him being like a F6, D6 sort of situation, because if you're not cashing him in as a rookie next week, you know, like he suddenly becomes a forced trade if you know, he puts another 50 up and his break even's 120. Like, he could lose 50, 60K in the blink of an eye while we're trying to make other trades.
I will say, though, that in that run of games, 4 of the 6 of them are at Marvel, and I do think that ground
that
suits
helps.
Him a lot.
That helps. Yeah.
If he's got the right role down back, I don't think the opponent will matter so much. I think he'll still score.
Yeah. How much do you attribute to Hall's presence versus him getting attention as to why he wasn't playing across halfback?
Oh, I just think it was a perfect mixture of things going wrong for him. Just they're coming into the game underdone, getting the tag, so his confidence was low. Hall coming in, who can play that role, which just meant that Clarko had the freedom to shift Sheasel forward. It was just everything was bad. It was an off game. We need more. We need another data point.
Yeah, okay. And we'll reconvene
next week
at a later date. Yeah. I guess the thing was, like, he's been taking the second most kick-ins for North up until this point. He took none on the weekend. Zeeble took 6, Aaron Hall took 5, and Luke McDonald, who was the other main kick-in taker, took 1. So he literally hasn't had a kick-in either. So it was a clear role change. It's just we need, as you say, another data point to figure out if that was tag related, Hall related, or what. So I appreciate that chat. The next thing we'll go on to is the rookies that we should be looking at trading in this week or next week, Pistol. Some names off the top of my head, we've got Wagner, Seamus Mitchell. They're probably the big two names this week, you'd say?
Yeah, so, I mean, Mitchell is playing that Scrimshaw-type role. Scrimshaw was an emergency. Yep. He's been struggling with a toe injury. I don't think after watching Mitchell play 2 weeks in a row that you can drop him currently. I do think...
He looks good.
Yeah, he looks really solid. It's one of those ones where, look, if he plays badly 2 weeks in a row, he's probably out of the team.
Yeah.
But he's playing well and he's scoring well. I mean, that's important as well. So if he can, you know, even if he makes it another 2 weeks, he's made 100K straight off, you know, scoring those 70s. So I think he's got a good chance this week to get at Marvel as well, might suit him. You know, he scored 67 and 79. It's an on-field rookie option. It's nothing to be sneezed at.
Yeah. Yeah, getting some kick-ins and stuff down back as well. Like, he's got some extra cheap points. So, yeah, like, I think he goes from having someone like a McKenna or a Wilmot or, in my case, Cowan or Young looping at D6 to someone that is suddenly a little bit more confident in getting a 60 sort of week in, week out. So, I like him. What are your thoughts on Wagner? Obviously, the news today, the unconfirmed, at least to my knowledge at this point, Pistols, that Heath Chapman, who would have forced him out of the side, has suffered another hamstring blow by the sounds of things. Do you have any more on that?
No, it's still unconfirmed, but there were sightings at training that he went down and was very upset and the team was getting around him. So very bad news for Chapman, but he was the biggest threat to Wagner's role in the side. So I think Wagner's getting another week. And look, he scored 64. I honestly thought he was completely fine last week. He was very shaky in that first game, but game two looked decent enough, didn't do much wrong. I think we will get to see him again. And if you need a boost, I mean, you've got two decent enough rookies that it's, I think, worthwhile. And you can bring in whoever you want with that third one. I think both of these seem like solid options. Chizo, you can pay up more, though, if you look at the 200K range. You got Samson Ryan, just 210K, who is looking very good at the moment, with a negative 11 break even. And you also have Xavier O'Halloran from GWS. I think he's 202K, just scored a ton in his game. Are these sorts of guys that are at the elevated price worth looking at?
Not for me personally, not with the options of Wagner and Mitchell to be looking at. Samson Ryan hasn't really done a lot more than just reset his break even from a spike score. He could very easily just go back to his 40s and 50s, at which point you've literally made no money off him, even with a break even. Like his projected score, if he goes 56 average over the next 3 weeks, you're going to make about 60K, maybe 65K out of him. I'm not entirely sure. I think we saw with Michael Aney over the last couple of weeks, that's always fraught with danger, and I don't think Samson Ryan has the upside to really make that worth it. So with the other options, I think it's probably a no for me. O'Halloran has been around a little while. He's not too bad, but again, the elevated price is something that scares me off. There's one we haven't mentioned, Pistol, that's sort of gone a little under the radar, and that's Sam Sturt. Hot on him in the preseason if he was going to get a role. Unfortunately, he's played his second game sort of like at a time where, unfortunately, it doesn't look like we're going to be able to pick him, but he's not really setting the world on fire. He'd be, if for whatever reason you need a forward rookie this week, you'd be picking Seamus Mitchell. If you're looking for two forward rookies this week, you'd probably be looking at Sam Sturt.
Yeah, he's not going to be an amazing scorer, and Fremantle look quite poor. So sorry for mentioning that again in back-to-back podcasts, but it just doesn't scream spike score at this stage.
Yep.
If they were looking really hot, then maybe, but it's not looking that way. And to add to your point about O'Halloran, he had two games in a row of roughly 22% CBA. So it's not like a massive mid-roll, but he had a huge preseason. They were really excited about him, so that might continue through the season, but he's not a 100 average player, right? So
no.
I think he's probably more of a chance of making 100K than Ryan, but at the end of the day, you've got players like Seamus Mitchell and Wagner who could technically make more than that just by putting out 65s, which feels a lot more sustainable than these guys having to go 75, 80.
Mate, if they're averaging 65s by the buyers, they've made 200K.
Yeah, well, that's right. So you've got more upside there for cash gen potential.
Yeah, I think with the those five rookies that we touched on, Wagner, Mitchell, Ryan, O'Halloran and Sturt, are probably the main ones we're looking at. We obviously had Chin Cotter and Sam Simpson have their first game on the weekend. I think with Wagner and Mitchell available, you wouldn't there's no real reason to be going early on either of those guys, even though they look probably better than Mitchell and Wagner individually. Like in a 1v1 basis, I'd probably like either of those two. But they're not of such quality that they'd be taking precedence and going early on them.
Well, it's hard to judge. Shinkota's got Doherty coming back soon, and I don't know if he's going
to
hold.
4 to 6 weeks, though.
It's less than four now, but fewer. But it's more he might, you know, replace Cowan, for example. That could happen. And it's a bit hard to judge, so I want to see him again next week. And then you still have, like, Angwin, who looks quite good for GWS, played a bit of the wing, and was definitely held his own at AFL level and could get a decent run of games as well. And Tickle looks good in the ruck for Port, but again...
Tickle me Elmo.
He's going to play again this week. I think they pretty much confirmed it because Lycett
yeah,
is
they
with
have.
The B team or whatever already. So he's getting another game. And rucks, when they're playing as rucks, score pretty well. So he might be a good cash cow, but you know, obviously he's on 98K, so it's a bit more expensive. If you like those guys a hell of a lot more than Wagner this week, I guess you could go early on one of them, but just feels risky because it takes one bad game from a rookie in their second week and then they don't get a third. So it feels like the safe play is to probably boost this week and probably boost next week.
So this is upgrade season, let's be honest. Yeah. Like, we're in that period. We've got a couple rookies, Wagner, Mitchell, let's say Chincotta and Simpson next week. Suddenly you've turned over a bunch of rookies, you've got a bunch of cash. Did you mention Ryan Angman?
I did.
I zone out?
No.
Okay, cool.
Fair enough. Don't blame you.
perfect. I'm not the only one that zones out to this podcast. We'll talk about some upgrade targets based on that cash that we're going to be making. Over the next fortnight, we are going to see some considerable gains in terms of our scoring output of our sides. Pistol, the one that we talked about last week is Cogs. He sort of came through with a score that we were hoping he was going to be able to do. He'd be on the way upwards and looking as another trade-off, and he's still technically under 500K, but he's gone 136 for his second 130-plus score this year.
Yeah, that's not a technicality. He just is under 500,000. I think he's probably the best cheap primo at the moment that you can get. I think him and Jay-Z, Zeeble, who's looking like he's going to be a primo as well at 467K, they're probably the best two guys if you don't have under 500K that I'd probably pick up first.
Yeah. So that sounds like you're ranking Jay-Z ahead of Day, who's also available coming back from the suspension?
Yeah, I think so. Just Jay-Z's role is really consistent, and Day... I like enough that I am going to get him this week, so definitely high on Day. I think he's more of a guy that's going to finish 10th-ish of his position. Jay-Z's probably around that 8th-ish mark, and the reason I'm thinking that is purely on... It's hard to predict how Hawthorne are going to go through the rest of the season, what their midfield mix is going to be. I think Day is going to be a large part of that, but it's not a guarantee given they've got Newcomb and Nash as well. You know, if he's going to be an 80 CBA mid, 80%, if he's going to be a 65%, I just don't know exactly. So I feel safer with Jay-Z's role and consistency. Yeah. But to be honest, I know Nash has looked really good in the last 2 weeks, very impressive, but he was getting, in round three, for example, he got 74% CBAs alongside Day, and then the week after he got 61% alongside Day. Like, Nash, since round three, has been Hawthorne's highest CBA mid.
Yeah.
Like, he has, you know, in those rounds three and four, we saw Newcomb and Warple be in the 50s in the CBA. So when all of the Hawthorne mids were fit in round three and round four, their number one mid in round three was Nash and then Day.
Yeah.
And in round four was Day and then Nash. And going forward, I think that's going to be the same. Like, I think they're going to be the one and two, you know, at least while they're in good form. And it's a good mix, right? Because Nash is tall. He's a big-bodied midfielder. So he's got that height and presence in that midfield. And Day's got that agility and speed. So they're a really good combination. And then Newcomb and Warple are kind of like a bit of both, I guess, to rotate in as well. So they are sticking with a really tight core midfield group. And I think, I mean, that's good for scoring for all these guys, but particularly Day, because he's listed as a defender and super coach, but he's found himself as part of a tight midfield core. So the role will be good for him. I think it will be hard for him, and just because he's very talented, to go under 90. I feel like that's a worst case scenario. And your upside there is probably still, you know, 100 average or so. And that's yeah, pretty good.
Yeah. I think the next 6 weeks we're going to see a lot of good scores from Zeeble as well. Like if you're in a position where you haven't been able to get Zeeble at this point, I think it's a pretty clear pick to go Zeeble over Day. Day, there's a lot of hopes and dreams surrounding what score he might actually get. And we're seeing a lot of the upside, but there's also some inherent risk because we're picking a guy that we have like three, maybe four rounds of data on. I'll think three rounds of data as a midfielder. Now, we know he's going to be good. Like, he's coming into that kind of 3-4 year window, vaguely from memory. So he's going to be good, I guess. At 450K, you've got to be cognizant of the risk that is there. So I'm certainly not knocking the pick at all. I just think that there might be other priorities that we want to be looking at. Like if you have the cash to go straight to a Sinclair or a Sicily, I think that's obvious over Day for me personally. I'd love to know what your thoughts would be, Pistol. Are you using two trades if you can get Day from that, or would you boost to get Sicily or...
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Sinclair instead of getting Day.
I think that purely comes down to your cash generation of your side. If you're not struggling with cash at all, I'd be paying up for a Sicily or a Sinclair type. But if you're like, I think, most people, where you've suffered some injuries to some rookies and it's stifled the cash gen, or you're a little bit worried, if you have to kind of...
Or you miss Chandler or Van Ruin or something like that.
Yeah, you miss one of those guys. And I think if you feel deep down in your gut that you're going to have to like kind of go cheap in one position on your field, I'd rather cheap out on my D6 than my M8 at the end of the day.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm looking at my side and I'm like, look, my backline sucks. It does. And I'm going to bring in Day instead of a Sicily or a Sinclair, but then I'm going to be able to get Walsh in my midfield instead of like a Darcy Parrish type. And, I shouldn't have used Parrish as an example. It's not an exact, I'm 20k off. It's someone that's way worse than Parrish, you know, 520k guy, 510k guy. And I'm looking like, do I want to cheap out and gamble, you know, a Degoe? There we go, Chiso. A Degoe at an M8. Do I want to take that gamble and then get a Sicily, or should I just take the gamble on Day and get Walsh? I mean, I'd pick Walsh and Day every day of the week in that circumstance. So that's kind of how I'm viewing this situation, at least for me and my side.
Yeah. Every day of the Walsh, you'd pick him. So the next question I'd like... you've touched on Walsh. Walsh seems pretty high on your radar. He's obviously come back from that back injury and has looked... First game, he looked a little bit underdone, but the game this week, he looked brilliant, I thought.
Well, look, I wrote this big thing to my team Pistol on Slack before Walsh played his first game. And I was like, look, we know the contested beasts haven't been scoring amazingly well. And whether or not that's because, whatever reason, if it's the attacking football and the run game style, I'm like, look, Walsh runs. That's his thing. He gets from contest to contest. He hunts the ball. And even if he has that, I think he had 55% CBAs last year, and that was like much lower than the year before where he went 117 average. I'm like, even if he goes, you know, the 55% CBAs, which is a 110 average, I think because of his running ability and the way he plays a game, he's going to have an uptick just purely because of how hard he runs. And
yeah.
I'm like, I want him. Then it was a very welcome surprise this week to see him get 83% CBAs, kind of out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And lead Carlton for CBAs. And I'm like, wow, that was unexpected. And obviously he put out a 130 as well. So I'm hot on Walsh. There is injury risk with any back injury. That's like one of the worst injuries in AFL, because as we saw with George Hewitt last year, you get like a sore back and they say it's a 1 week injury and then you never play again for 6 months. Like
never play again.
Yeah, for 6 months. He didn't play another game, but every week they're like, oh, his back's sore. It's 1 week away. And you never know when to trade. And it just like keeps sucking you in. And I feel like back injuries do that a lot. Like Luke Ryan's done that in the past as well with back injuries or back soreness. So it's not good. And I'm taking the gamble because I thought before even seeing Walsh that this year would suit him really well. And now he's scoring really well and his role is better, potentially better than I expected. I'm like, just sign me up already. And that's
the problem is he's going to score 160 on the Eagles at Optus Stadium this week. We won't actually know if he's better or not.
I'd like to take the 160 in my team as a bit of a POD. He's got around 15 bye though, which might make me cop a donut a bit later, which isn't ideal. So I'm aware that it's a gamble, but as I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast as well, Walsh is one of my favorite players in the AFL. I know I'm Collingwood supporter, so I'm not allowed to say that out loud, but I love watching Walsh play. I think he's just amazing. And if it helps me sit through Carlton games, then I'm doing it for the good of all you people out there listening, making a Collingwood
Can't play
supporter.
Good footy, mate.
I mean, they haven't been.
good to watch is what I mean.
Yeah, sometimes. But Walsh makes it a lot better. So I'm pretty keen on starting if I could have, and that wasn't an option. So I'm just doing it now.
He was a slap me if I don't start like 18 months ago.
Yeah, I mean, him and even Laird last year that I wanted to start, and then he broke his thumb, so I didn't start him, and then I never got him the whole season. I don't want that to happen this time. I was thinking, if I go someone cheaper like Zach Merritt, for example, who's a great pick in his own right, I'm like, I just don't think I'll ever get Walsh because I'm going to focus probably on Clayton Oliver next and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I just want Walsh. So I'm just going to get Walsh.
Yeah.
I got the money. I'm just going to do it.
I sort of was faced with a scenario last week where if Tom Green was playing, I would have easily upgraded to a defender last week. But I ended up getting Parrish just because of the exposure that I had in the midfield with Tom Green not playing. And I didn't like the idea of having Ollie Hollins at M7 and then one of Johnson and Roberts at M8. And it turned out to be a pretty good decision for me, even though I had Tyler Young in the field for his 27.
So you lost points.
I lost points. But Parrish made the difference between who I was going to trade it in. So I was like 2 points in the black for it. I guess I'm now focused on trying to upgrade my back line. I'm going to miss Walsh this week. And then next week I'm probably going to be looking at Oliver. So basically the situation that you've just described, you're going to be one of those coaches that has a Walsh unique, and I think that's a massive head-to-head win too.
That's kind of what I'm hoping for. So anyway, touch wood, he doesn't break down and get injured this week like Took did, because that was meant to be my POD from last week. But Chizo, speaking of the Essendon boys, I mean, Parrish dropped in price just, so he's still very, very cheap. And Zerrett has quietly had a really good season. He had a poor round one, and then he's basically just lost 40k on his starting price. Is down to 578k, but his last couple of games before he got injured was a 134, 111, 88, 114. So he had a good burst. And we know Essendon have a really amazing run from round 10 onwards, like talking North Melbourne twice, West Coast twice type run. Is he somebody that's high on your radar, and would you recommend bringing him in or Parrish, or what's the deal between them?
I think you can take a pick between Zerrett and Parrish. I think they're basically equally as good as each other. I think that Parrish has the potential to have higher ceiling games. Like, let's think of 2021.
Yeah, all the medals.
I want to say we won all the medals, and he was just playing out of his skin. I don't see that sort of ceiling with Zerrett, and they're just pretty much going to go blow for blow. They're both inside like CBA mids, and Scott's been pretty consistent with his midfield this year, so I think that's been great. I just think I think that they're I can't really split them. I think either of them are going to be fine. I would probably go Parrish because he's the sexiest man. No, because he's like if I can't split them, I'm going to pick the cheaper one.
Yeah,
that's honestly where I'm going.
I'm looking at, you know, trying to pick one of them up before round 10, before that run.
Yeah,
and it's just going to be whichever's cheaper.
Yeah,
I think it's
I think
as simple
think
as that
as well.
I mean,
all right, yep. Next question.
Yep.
Sinclair or Sicily, if you had to pick one, and why?
All right. Like the question, I'm going to go with a slightly controversial answer, I think. I'm going to go with
Sicily. You're going to go Will Day.
Yeah, Will Day. I'm going to go with Sicily.
Yeah.
I know that Sicily may not have even peaked in price drop. That was a weird way of saying it.
Dipped? Troughed?
I could have said it way better. But anyway, he's 533K with a break even of 111. I like the matchup this week against the Bulldogs. I really do. It feels like to me that his role is stable. Like he's not really being thrown around as much as I was scared about in the preseason. Like maybe there was that little bit of mid. Hasn't been thrown forward with all their forward injuries at all. So he's been really stable, and I know the kickouts are a bit of a pain in the bum, but he's really tracking similarly to last year in kickouts. But there's just that outlier. The game at Norwood Oval, which he took 1 of 16 kickouts, that's going to skew his stats massively. I mean, it's a really small ground. I think potentially Hawthorn were trying to use like a shorter, more accurate kick in terms of their play style on a small, skinny ground, compared to like bombing it long that Sicily does. I don't know, just a theory, but that's going to skew the stats for the whole year, because all the other games has been about that 30% mark, which was the same as last year. So I don't think there's that much of a role change for him to, you know, suddenly go from a 113 average to 100 flat. I think he's probably a bit underpriced. He might go around 105 mark. The thing that worries me about Sinclair is the rising CBAs. In the last 4 weeks, or even the last five, for every week it's gone up. It started with 0, then 9, then 21%, then 38%, 39%, and last week was 42% CBAs. And I don't want Jack Sinclair the midfielder. I want Jack Sinclair the halfback, because that's where
the seagull.
I want the seagull role. I mean, he's still scoring well because he's a great player, and he's obviously going to score well in the midfield as well. But if I want like peak ceiling Jack Sinclair, I don't think it's going to be in Saints midfield.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I tend to agree. I think Sicily is still playing pretty much the exact same role as he was last year. I don't think anything has changed a whole lot. And just like you say, I feel like there's maybe one or two games, like that 70 and that 90, where I think I said to you that like I think he's unders. I think that's 90 he scored, that was unders. That felt like a three figure game. And it sort of feels like that we're getting more of a bargain for where Sicily's uptick might be compared to Sinclair. I think Sinclair is still definitively a good pick. I still
Very
think
good.
He's going to be a top 6 to 8 defender, maybe better. He's going to go 100 plus. Like, I truly believe that's the type of player he is. Something that unsettled me a little bit on the weekend is post game he was interviewed on TV, and he basically he was out and out and said, "Oh, I played a lot of midfield time this week because I was copping attention early in the game, and Ross wanted me to get freed up." I'm like, you know, like this is what happened towards the end of last year. He started copping attention. His scores got affected and whatnot. If copping attention from a forward tag now means that he loses that defensive kind of seagull role, that's not something you have to worry about with Sicily. And you're going to have games where Sinclair is going to be costing himself a 120 because he's no longer in the back line to scoop up the ball.
Yeah, I think his floor gets affected. And that's,
yeah,
like if Sicily's got a higher floor, I like getting those players because they don't fall as much. And I think I can get Sinclair, hopefully, a little bit cheaper throughout the season. But to be completely honest, I think they're both top six defenders.
I would
like both of them in my final team.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. But like, if I was picking one this week, I think Sicily just for me personally. I guess that leads straight into Harry Himmelberg. Obviously, Sam Taylor has had the hamstring, the high grade hamstring is going to be out for 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
I think he might be having surgery on it. But that leads into, is Harry Himmelberg going to go back? And if so, we've got a 100 plus defender at 350k.
I think Alig got injured. And he's out for like 1 to 2 weeks or something as well in that VFL. So he should, I think he goes back at least for 2 weeks minimum. And probably 10 weeks because he's going to be so good at it. Because we know he's so good at it. So you get primo scoring at 385k. I mean, I didn't have the trades and I'm using my boost because I had the Tuke injury. This is like the pick. Like, I would take this pick over the Cozzy Pickett pick from a couple of weeks ago at a similar price point any day of the week. Like, if I...
Yeah.
This is the one where if you're having an average start and you're asking me, how do I come back? I'm like, well, if you have the trades to burn, this is the gamble because he goes 110-plus as a defender. We saw that last year. He was 110-plus defender. If you're going to get a guy for 385K that's going to go 110-plus potentially for... I mean, it's risky again because it might be just 2 weeks, but let's say 10 to 12 weeks. He's not just a, like, he's like an absolute jet. You're getting top tier premium scoring, but you're trading him out at 550K. Like, you're making, it's a cash cow as well. So,
yeah.
If I could Chizo, which I clearly can't, this would be where I would be taking the punt. I would be, if I didn't cop an injury last week, knowing me, I would 100% be bringing Himmelberg in this week.
Yeah. The only issue that I kind of see with that is that when Taylor went down, he immediately went back to sort of plug the hole. But then in the fourth quarter, he was back into the forward line again. So it's
risky. It's a risky pick.
even in that little window, we don't have a definitive answer for what they really want him to do.
Absolutely.
And we could have him for 2 weeks and he scores 110 until Alia becomes available again. It's just like, and then he gets chucked forward. So, yeah, it really comes down to if you're in a position to take that risk and if you have the trades. If you've been, say, Pistol or myself and have been absolutely hammered with carnage so far and you're getting to the low 20s in terms of trades, it's even if he does go back, it's probably one of those things that you just pay $450 for him in a month's time than it is to take the risk.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, this is not for the faint-hearted. Like, I wouldn't really want to be talking anyone into the pick. But if you have, like, a spare 50K in stock or something and you're like, oh, yeah, I'll just do it and see what happens, like, totally
fine.
Sounds
like you're talking someone into it.
No. This is not a... this is a high-risk, high-reward, but I got to stress more on the risk part because I probably didn't do a fair
and
job.
And the high
it.
Part.
It's very, very risky.
Yeah. All right, next one. When should we be trading our mid prices, the likes of Hopper, Setterfield, these kind of guys? When are you looking to trade these guys on setters with a slightly low score on the weekend means that we're now playing break even with these guys? Are you confident in holding them for the long term and upgrading and trading the rookies around them? Or are they being treated like a cash cow like the rest of them? What's your thoughts on that?
I would like to hold Setterfield for that for... until his bye, because he can play West Coast, North Melbourne, like in the lead up to the bye. But I was a little bit worried that when Hobbs was subbed on, Setterfield got
pushed. You lost
pushed.
Your CBAs, bro.
Yeah, so Setterfield got pushed out of the media. The season low, 58% CBAs. Hobbs came in and straight away got 27% CBAs in that last quarter. And I didn't like that. I think it was a mistake and, you know, Essendon lost the game. Maybe not directly because of it, but it couldn't have helped. So it might not happen next week, and he obviously has a high ceiling. But it's enough to worry me that if I am specifically using him to get to Clary, which I've said on almost every podcast, if he's about to go down, you know, he's got a break-even of 88, and we know Clary's got a break-even of 171. It's the timing's just working out for that to be done next week. And
yeah,
you could, there's an argument to be had if you're playing purely a break-even game rather than a points game. There's an argument to be had to be trading him this week because he might lose money, and keeping someone over him that you were, I don't know, like an Ashcroft or whatever, who probably goes up another 10K, purely just to stop yourself losing the money. But you will score fewer points because of it, because Satterfield should score more than any rookie. So I think if you have Oliver, I don't know if there's anybody else that's worth target. I mean, maybe Laird's coming into good form, Chiso.
Yeah, baby.
I would like to hold him, but if you need him to get to one of the big, big dogs, I think it's okay to sell him.
Yeah. Is it crazy for me to tell you that Satterfield in the six games this season has had one ton so far? He feels like he's been better than that.
He has been better than that. Well, it feels like it.
He had a 147 against Gold Coast. Game totally out of the blue, like just fantastic, awesome. He's going to be a top 10 mid based on that output. Then his other five scores are 99, 82, 87, 91, 76.
It's not that good, like, is it?
It's not amazing. I mean, like, you compare that to Jacob Hopper, it's not like Hopper's like way better than him, and people that went Hopper to Satterfield are idiots. That's not it at all. I think they're like basically like for like. But I think maybe our perception of what his output was going to be when he was averaging 123 across the first fortnight may have kind of tricked us a little bit. Maybe rose-colored glasses, and he's really only like
look at the opponents. 90
to 95 average.
Round one and two. Who do you play?
Spuds.
Played Hawthorn and Gold Coast.
Hawthorn and Gold Coast, yeah.
That's you know, two of the weakest teams in the AFL.
Yeah, I guess in the next week is when we're going to find out, really, isn't it? Like, against the tough opponents. I mean, he went 87 on GWS, who's not exactly tough. But St Kilda, top of the table, 82. Melbourne, good side, 91. Collingwood, good side, 76. He's got Geelong, Port Adelaide, Brisbane, Richmond in the next four. We're really going to, like, you'll know in the next fortnight whether you're going to be holding him. And so you may be forced into making a decision next week to get Oliver from him. If you actually believe that he's not going to be that 100 plus that's going to keep making you cash. Because if he's not going to keep making you cash, he's basically topped out.
Yep. Ah, it's interesting. This is a big week with all these rookies kind of topping out similar timing. And it's all the expensive ones too.
Yep. Yeah, I absolutely agree. I guess the thing with Satterfield is it's not like he's going to end up back below 400K. So like he's 446 now. Like I don't think we're going to see him down below 400K, even if he isn't that guy that we thought he was going to be.
Yeah.
So you can probably hold him and trade around him, and that's not going to be an issue as well. It just means he's just not as good as what we thought he was going to be.
Yep.
Cool. Interesting. All right. Next big one to talk about. What the heck's happening with Gordon Pistol? He's got a 90.7 average for the year. He had 47. He was supposed to be the golden child. He's had one bad score. I will be honest. He's gone 115, 107, 85, 102, 88. That was all looking great for the first year. Averaging 100 over the first five, that's great. And he's put out a 47 against Geelong and an absolute smashing. Our premiums typically still put up 70 pluses even when they get beaten by that much. Is he a premium?
I think he is. I think Swans just got so just destroyed by Cats, that they're massively impacted their pie. I mean, Supercoach pie. I mean, you got to remember, if you look at his game, he had 16 disposals and he had 16 kicks. That's a big Supercoach tick. None of this handball crap. You know, he's getting the high point scoring plays, right? He had zero goals three. So that's big missed opportunities. Obviously, he missed the goal three times. Could have been three goals. You know, then we're not even discussing it. And then he had four frees against in the first half when the scaling was
massive.
The biggest amount, because obviously they kept getting pummeled for the rest of the game.
Didn't bloody Matty Roberts got injured on 10 and he ended up doubling his score because of scaling?
Close to it,
Or am I misremembering that?
Close to it. But yeah, Goulden specifically had three frees, four and four against at halftime, and I was amazed that was just so many frees. But he had seven clangers from 16 touches. I mean, It wasn't a good game. He was, I think from memory, he was on like one or two at quarter time. And then had
Tom Green still tons up from that, thank you.
Well, he was dealing with negative scaling the whole time, and then the team went on to lose by like 90 plus points. So I can't really. I mean, look, it is what it is.
Chalk it up to just a bad combination of factors, and you've still got faith in him, and he's back at the SCG for the Battle of the Bridge. Is it the Battle of the Bridge?
I think, yeah, Battle of the Bridge. Yeah, I just think Goulden doesn't have a game like that again for the rest of the season.
Yep.
So it's a hold for me, and if he keeps putting out scores above anything like it, just his first five games on repeat, you know, two scores in the 80s, three scores in the 100s, with a 100 average for the rest of the season, then that's fine.
Fine. Yep. Yep. Absolutely. Okay, cool. The next one and probably the last topic that we're going to talk about is I want to know your boost strategy. I think last year I left myself two for the buys or one for the buys, and that was really, really slow in terms of upgrade cadence. You've gone the opposite way this year where you're just like, I am going to deal with the buys when I get there. I'm not going to have boosts to do it, but I'll sideways if I have to. Do you think there's a happy medium, or do you think that over, you know, I boosted last week, I'm probably going to boost this week to get more rookies, I'm probably going to boost next week to get the two good rookies that come through. Suddenly I've just gone bang, bang, bang with my boosts, and kind of that has resulted in my kind of uptick in overall rank. Do you think that everyone should be following that strategy?
Yeah, boost baby. You got to follow the rookies. I mean, at the end of the day, in a perfect world, you have one for the round 15 bye, but I don't think it's that important because I think it's probably we haven't factored in as much as we haven't thought about it as greatly as maybe now that I'm thinking about it. Like at the beginning of the season, I wasn't thinking about buying as much detail as I'm thinking right now. And I've come to a conclusion, or at least a thought, Chizo, that this year's buys, instead of there being three rounds, there's four rounds of buys. So that means instead of 3 weeks of three trades, there's 4 weeks of three trades. So
we can run out faster.
We can run out faster, but we can also plan better because one of those rounds at least, we're going to have enough players for our side, and we can now start shifting players early. Like the round
a week earlier.
We can shift it a week earlier because we have more trades through the buy period and we'll be able to get through the buys more easily. There's more maneuverability. Yeah. So that's kind of the thought I had during the week that I was excited to say on the podcast that I actually might not need my boost at all for the buys.
I'm more comfortable having three trades in a week to prepare for round 15 than keeping one extra trade to boost, so I have four. I think that the way you've phrased that has been eye-opening for me. That's generally not a thought I've had.
Well, that's why you listen to the Doc Supercoach podcast.
Yeah. And I don't have many thoughts, so that's not surprising. Given that that is now your strategy, when are you projecting to have zero trades? Round 15?
Pretty much zero trades by round 15. But I hope it doesn't happen, but it probably will happen that I'll have very, very, very few trades coming out of the buys. But we'll play that as we go. I think for right now, you want to use your boosts where the good rookies are. I think this week you could take the Wagner and the Mitchell and the boost. Next week you can take two of the good ones and a boost. I don't know what's going to be on the cards after that, but you just take them as they come. If you've done really well holding your boosts until this point, this is where you want to crank it out because you can start getting primos ahead of people on the board. It's just really unfortunate for everyone that got Tuke Miller in because it took a boost for everyone that got Tuke that I know used a boost. And now everyone I know with Tuke has to use another one. So that's just you've blown both your boosts and that sucks.
Yeah.
You can't.
It stops you from falling back into the pack, which is what would have happened in previous years without the boost. So it's unfortunate that you have to use two of them, but it's almost the only consequence.
Yeah. So, I mean, I see it as my team was one. I wasn't a premium ahead, but I was a mid pricer ahead. I was like a Cetaphield / Jay-Z ahead of most teams.
Why am I trading in Jay-Z if he's a mid-price?
No, he's premium. I was one premium ahead of teams, and that's why I've been cutting my rank in half every week since round one and gaining ground. But because of this now, I'm running out of my boosts earlier, people are going to boost and be able to overtake me instead of me being able to, you know, stay ahead of them. So that's a bit upsetting, yeah. But it is what it is. I just got to keep going. And yeah. I think if you're in a position that you're still back out, you know, the 20K mark or 30K mark, this is the time now. It's like put on the burners and just boost.
Put on the jets.
The jets. Thank you. I just got worse way with words for a podcaster.
The worst way with words. I agree.
Awesome. Cheese. So you want to jump into captaincies this week?
Whoa. Well, we talked about this last week.
I know.
Don't you be preempting me?
What are you
waiting
for?
All right, Pistol, we're going to jump into VC and C options this week, which is complicated a little bit because we don't have the typical Madden emergency captaincy score that we can use because they play in the third game against the Swans on the Saturday afternoon. So that leaves us with a little bit of a tricky week. But I suppose a lot, like those that have Constable and Chesser, it's just another normal week for you. So it could be just as easy. I think it's super easy just going English into Dacos.
It's hard to argue.
Yeah.
I mean,
now I've done the vanilla stuff. Now I want you to get a little bit more exciting.
Well, I want to actually discuss English versus Bontempelli because English is seemingly, he's a solid 130, right? Like you're getting your 130 to 140 score out of English. He's against Reeves. We know Lynch got concussed, so he's out. So they'll probably bring back Meek, but I don't think that's going to bother English very much. It's a great matchup for English. But Bontempelli's in some sick form at the moment. Like he's truly looking like an unbelievable player. I think is it his 200th this week? I think it's a milestone game as well. So there's just that little bit of incentive as well for him to have a big game. Who are you putting your VC on between these two guys?
Bont's got a 3-round average of 150.
A tie. But yeah, between these two,
yeah.
Where's your VC going?
I think that there's an issue with them deciding to send Finn McGuinness and English has literally coming up against a ruckman that doesn't know which arm to use to try and tap the ball. So I'm probably still going to stick with English just because I'm a softy safety boy. But everyone else. Okay, I have to come clean. Apparently, at the wedding, I convinced someone that I just met and got talking to Supercoach about to take his VC off Bont and put it on English. I can't corroborate that because I can't remember, but apparently that's what happened.
Oh, dear.
So based on that, I would chuck the VC on Bontempelli and not listen to me.
I think the Connor Nash big body matchup with Bont is a real ripper. And it's enough to scare me a little bit off Bont, but he's in amazing form. So he'll find a way to score well. But I'm with you. I'm going to take the 130 plus English score this week and just call it a happy days and not even think about it. But if you don't have English and you don't have Bontempelli, which I think they're probably the best two VCs, let's be honest.
Yep.
Is somebody like Walsh?
Oliver.
Or Oliver against North Melbourne sort of tempting you?
He could actually meet his break even this week. That's what I'm worried about.
I am worried about that too. I think I think that's the I don't know why I haven't VC'd or C'd Dacos in any game this whole year and is averaging 135 and this week I'm still like, yep, English into Oliver, easy.
And then if Oliver's laid out, I'll go to Walsh.
Yeah, that's basically anything to avoid putting the captaincy on Dacos. Yeah. But I mean, I still think that. I can't lie.
Yeah, Dacos is going to be a freak, but I just feel like this week we're going to get a decent captaincy option. Well, I just think we will be.
Last week you did say we were going to get lots of decent captaincy scores, and you were right. We did get a lot of decent captaincy
scores. Yeah, they just happened to be all in my team.
There we go. Perfect.
All right. Can we talk about Taranto sneakily doing 114 average this year?
Yeah, he's been very good. His floor is really high.
He got traded out a bunch a few weeks ago because he wasn't going to burn anyone and we could do some corrective trades, and he's just gone sick ever since.
Yeah, no, 3-round average of 124, which is 0.3. Definitely damaging.
I hadn't pegged him as the number one forward so far. Like, I hadn't pegged that as happening. I thought he'd be like 3, 4, 5. But he's been crazy.
I'm going to throw one at you last minute. Mitchell on field or Van Rooyen on field?
Mitchell. Oh, that's tough.
You're like, ooh, but North Melbourne.
I'm going to say Van Rooyen on field over Mitchell.
Okay. I'm half tempted to take your advice. Currently I have Mitchell on field, but now I'm a bit scared, so...
Do you have a Matty Roberts that you can loop with? No, we can't even loop.
I actually like Oscar Baker this week against Hawks.
Yeah, that's true.
As a loop, to try loop onto the field. I think that could be decent for people that are looping. I think, Connor McKenna against Freo as well could be a decent loop. A lot of decent loop boys.
God, I've been really impressed with the I just didn't think that we get this much consistency from the Demons rookies, and they've been really good. Like, there's every opportunity that there's coaches out there that miss both of them based on the fact that their job security was so, like, up in the air. And there was an article that I was reading in Slack today that JVR was, like, literally one mark stopped him from getting subbed at the start of the fourth, and then he ended up having, like, a 60-point final quarter.
I was winning a matchup by 57 points going into the last quarter of the Melbourne game with JVR against me, and I lost.
Rocked to the core.
And I lost, and it was my first loss in the league. Anyway, that's fine. I'm not upset about it.
Yeah, clearly. JVR and Chandler against North Melbourne, you think would get the lion's share of the points this week.
I don't know.
Mitchell against the Doggies. I mean, we've only got two data points. I might risk it. I got another question for you.
Oh, no, please.
Fergie Green or Van Rooyen on field?
Oh, I'm not going to put Fergie Green against Bulldogs just because he needs to kick goals to score well. And I feel a lot more comfortable for him kicking goals against GWS and Adelaide than I do against Bulldogs.
Cool.
Yeah. All right.
That's all we had to say.
I think that's about it, Chizo. We can wrap up.
All right, mate. Seeing as you're running the podcast, I'll let you wrap up then.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in this week. For those patrons, we'll be doing a patron-only Q&A podcast like we did last week. So please use the Slack channel podcast questions if you have any questions for the podcast tomorrow. Otherwise, you can find us at Dr_SC on Twitter. You can find myself at pistol_DRSC. Find JB at JB_DRSC. And you can find the man, the myth, the legend, Chizo at Chizo_DRSC. Thanks everybody for tuning in, and we'll catch you next week.
Mate, if you keep doing that, you'll take the job.